Greetings and Eucharenic jubilations, my subcutotic listeners, and welcome to this June 2017 Science News Update. I'm your host for this nefariously indelicate science podcast segment, Jim Campanella. Welcome, everyone. Let's just get started. Back in August or September of 2014, I reported on a rather disturbing story out of Colombia, the country of Colombia. Diego Gomez, a conservation biology student at the University of Quindío in Colombia, forgive my pronunciation as usual, had posted another scientist's graduate thesis online, not for any nefarious purposes, but simply to make it available to other scientists that might be interested. Unfortunately, this was seen as a copyright infringement by the country of Colombia. Also, Colombia does not view such things as we do in Europe and the US. They consider copyright violations to be criminal and not civil issues. Unfortunately, the author of the thesis posted by Gomez agreed with the government. He could have just ignored it, but instead he complained to the Colombian police about the posting. Poor Diego Gomez has been in jail for the last 3 years awaiting trial for committing a major crime. If you are a longtime listener to The Sofa and this podcast segment, you may be interested in this update on Diego Gomez's case. So, after 3 years of court proceedings in Colombia, a judge in Bogota finally acquitted Diego Gomez of charges that he violated copyright law. If he had been found guilty, 29-year-old Gomez could have faced at least another 3 years in prison and a fine of up to $6,000. Gomez's lawyer, Carolina Botera, says, "This case must spark a serious debate over the necessity of open access. Today we celebrate that justice was made in an absurd case that could have set a bad precedent for access to knowledge in Colombia." Unquote. Gomez stated way back in 2014, he said this about the case, "When uploading the thesis, I never thought I was violating any law. This type of literature is not of commercial interest, so I never thought I could do any damage to the author. On the contrary, I thought I was giving him benefits on sharing his work." Unquote. Ironically, Colombia's copyright law came out of an agreement with the United States during the Clinton administration that was originally intended to bolster trade. Carolina Botera concludes, quote, "Diego's story serves as a cautionary tale of what can happen when copyright law is broadened through international agreements. But as is often the case when trade agreements are used to expand copyright law, the agreement only exported the U.S.'s extreme criminal penalties. It didn't export the broad fair use provisions that you and the states have that protect citizens." Unquote. Next story, sugar. Do women and men eat sugar differently? Who knows? It's a darn fine question, and Dr. Carolina Lopez Rubalcava from the National Polytechnic Institute of Mexico City tried to answer it last month in a paper that was published in the journal Frontiers in Nutrition. So in the U.S., there are approximately 30 million people that suffer from eating disorders. And more than about a third of them are obese. And a multitude of factors contribute to this, including genetics, economic status, environment, mental health, existing health conditions, use of medications. Well, Lopez Rubalcava's study shows that gender might also influence whether somebody is more likely to binge when eating high-sugar foods. She says, quote, "Binge eating is a new disorder that's not quite well understood compared to anorexia and bulimia and other eating disorders. Overconsumption of sugar can trigger reward systems in the brain in the same way as an addictive drug, and there are no good pharmacological treatments yet." Unquote. Lopez Rubalcava used two strains of rats to better understand an organism's predisposition to acquire sugar binge-like behaviors based on gender. Her team monitored consumption of a 30% sucrose solution given to rats for 2 hours a day, 3 days a week, for 4 weeks. Additionally, she measured how inducing sugar binge-like behaviors influenced anxiety-like behaviors by putting the rats through a maze test and monitoring chemical changes in their brains, specifically in areas related to anxiety and ingestion behaviors. Finally, her team tested whether the drug fluoxetine, Prozac to you and me, which is often used to treat binge eating disorders, could stop sugar binge-like behaviors. After completing the behavioral assessments, the researchers examined the brains of the rats. And they found that animals that developed sugar binge-like behavior showed signs of anxiety in the maze test, but they also showed that female rats seemed to respond differently to the sucrose solution in one of the rat strains. Introducing the sucrose solution prompted changes of noradrenaline in the brains of these female rats, which were more susceptible to developing sugar binge-like behaviors. Of course, as I remind you, with every nutritional study that involves animals, remember they are not human, and it is not clear here whether the study is telling us much about human sugar binging behavior. Lopez Rubalcava says, quote, "By studying the disorder in the laboratory, we can examine its biological basis. We can test and analyze and determine how it's regulated, and we can study new pharmacological treatments. For example, right now, we are exploring the effects of phytochemicals from plants that are used for treating eating disorders in our animal models," unquote. Next story. Well, the next story is an astronomy story, but what it really is about the possibility of life elsewhere in the universe, more than just astronomy. Dr. Rafael Martin Domenech from the Centro de Astrobiología in Madrid, Spain, detected in the constellation Ophiuchus, about 400 light-years away, an organic molecule similar to the building blocks of proteins. It wasn't amino acids, but it was close. Methyl isocyanate. It's related in structure to superglue, of all things, and also related in structure to amino acids. And he found it present in the dust surrounding baby stars that will one day, well, resemble our own sun, Sol. This result supports the theory that life's raw ingredients were spawned from the formation of the solar system. The story was reported in the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society this month. And Martin Domenech says, quote, "Either life originated completely on the surface of the Earth, or some building blocks were formed in the solar nebula prior to the formation of the Earth and delivered by comets to our planet, where biochemical reactions continued, leading to the formation of the first living organisms. The detection of this molecule points toward the latter theory," unquote. Martin Domenech cautions in the article against jumping to conclusions. He says, "We don't know the chemical process or if methyl isocyanate is crucial or even how peptides could form from it." All right, upward and onward. Let's talk about juice. The American Academy of Pediatrics updated their official ruling on fruit juice, recommending none of the sweet stuff before the age of 1. The guidelines were just published this June in the issue of Pediatrics, and the recommendation is more restrictive than the previous recommendation, which advised no juice before the age of 6 months. The newest guidelines say that juice should be kept from kids until after 1 year or older. The article says that actual fruit is way more nutritious than the sweet, fiberless liquid that we give our kids. The AAP says that babies under 1 year old should be getting breast milk or formula until they're ready for solid foods. After their first birthdays, any extra liquids they drink should be water or milk. Whole fruits, or mashed up fruit, have more fiber and protein than juice. The only benefit that juice has over its former whole form is that it's way easier for the kids to slurp down. The AAP gave additional advice for parents who decide to actually give juice to children age one and older. First, don't give kids juice in bottles or sippy cups, especially at bedtime. That encourages kids to drink juice for long periods of time, prolonging sugar baths for their teeth. Yum, yum. Second, look out for unpasteurized juice. Harmful forms of E. coli bacteria can appear in unpasteurized apple cider, for example, posing a particular risk to very young children. Third, give 1 to 3-year-old kids no more than about 4 ounces of juice a day. That recommendation drops 2 ounces from earlier guidance that limited the juice between 4 and 6 ounces daily. Children 4 to 6 years old can get that extra 2 ounces back with a daily limit of between 4 and 6 ounces. Finally, make sure that kids are drinking 100% juice, not those sneaky cocktails or drinks that you find at the grocery store. Those are nutritional wastelands, and they're packed with even more sugar and devoid of any nutrients at all. They may as well be drinking sugar water, period. All right. Next story. Another astronomy story. The Milky Way galaxy is literally in the middle of nowhere. If indeed the Milky Way exists in the biggest cosmic void ever observed, that could actually solve a puzzling mismatch between the ways to measure how fast the universe is expanding. Observations of 120,000 galaxies bolstered the Milky Way's loner status. This data was presented by Dr. Benjamin Hochschild on June 7th at the American Astronomical Society Conference in Austin, Texas. Hochschild measured how the density of galaxies changed with distance from the Milky Way. In agreement with an earlier study, he found that the Milky Way has far fewer neighbors than it actually should. There's a rise in density about 1 billion light-years out, suggesting that the Milky Way resides in an abyss of about 2 billion light-years in width. Simulations of how cosmic structures form suggest that most galaxies clump along dense filaments of dark matter, which are separated by vast cosmic voids. If the Milky Way lives in one of those vast cosmic voids, it could help to explain why the universe seems to be expanding at different rates, depending on how it's measured. Measurements based on the cosmic microwave background, that is the earliest light in the universe, suggests one rate of expansion, while measurements of nearby supernovas suggest a faster rate of expansion. Hochschild says, quote, "Those nearby supernovas could be feeling an extra gravitational pull from all the matter at the edges of the void. The actual expansion rate is probably the slower one measured in the universe's early light. If you don't account for the void effects, you could mistake this relationship to indicate that there is too much expansion," unquote. So we used to think that humans were the center of all creation. Now it turns out that God literally stuck us in a massive void along with the rest of our galaxy. You have to wonder whether there was not some grand theological reason for doing that, like keeping humans humble once they found out, or whether God just decided we were just too dangerous to be anywhere near the rest of creation. Gotta wonder. Anyway, for the last story of the night, we're going to have our traditional weird jaunt into reproductive biology. So at least one species of fish don't seem to need females to reproduce. So there was a paper last month published in the Journal of the Royal Society called Royal Society Open Science. The work comes out of the lab of Dr. Morgado Santos at the University of Lisbon. So, when males reproduce without females, this is called androgenesis. And until now, androgenesis has not been seen naturally in vertebrates, although it has been observed in nonvertebrates. Morgado Santos has observed androgenesis in a fish called Squalius albernoides. The paper never mentions if the thing has a common name, so I don't know if it's called anything else besides that. At any rate, he says, quote, I was very surprised. We were studying the genetics of squalus in the wild, and we were collecting specimens. We did the genetic analysis, and I thought at first that maybe it was a mistake, and we had captured the father of the fish for the previous generation. However, when we examined the animal's mitochondrial DNA, which can only be inherited from the mother's egg, we found it differed from the father's. We had no choice but to conclude it was definitely an androgenetic individual. Unquote. While females of many species, including some vertebrates, are well known to be able to reproduce themselves without any input from a male, and that's a process called parthenogenesis, it was thought for a long time that clonal reproduction by males was impossible since they can't actually have offspring. However, it was eventually found that males in a handful of species, certain types of ants and freshwater clams, for example, can use a surrogate mother to clone themselves. And yes, that is as confusing as it sounds. But because there are so few examples of androgenesis, it's not always clear how the phenomenon arises. In some species, the males are thought to produce the sperm with twice the normal genetic content, that is, they're diploid, not haploid, and the genetic content of the egg is either absent or eliminated after fertilization. So only technically are these organisms actually cloning themselves. They still need eggs to do this. Alternatively, it's possible that a normal sperm, haploid, can fertilize an egg with either an absent or eliminated genome, and the male genome then replicates. Or the two sperm can co-fertilize an egg that doesn't have a genome at all. Parthenogenesis is much easier to explain. No male sperm are needed at all for that. At any rate, Morgado Santos says he has no idea which of the hypothetical processes that I just described may have taken place in his fish. Those fish he is studying are rather strange because they are a hybrid species. Squalius albernoides is a result of a natural hybridization event between another fish, Squalius piranesius, and now an extinct species of fish, Anasopris hispanica. Members of S. albernoides are generally odd anyway, insofar as males and females of the species are not predictably all diploid. Remember, humans get half their DNA from mom and half their DNA from dad to give you two copies of all your chromosomes. That's the definition of diploid. Morgado Santos says, this species seems to be an assorted mix of diploids, triploids, and tetraploids, meaning that they carry different combinations and copy numbers of the two genomes of the original species. We had been studying an isolated population of S. albernoides in the hopes of figuring out the complexities of reproduction in these strange fish when, by chance, we found that male offspring that had an exact genomic replica of its father. Unquote. Although the event was clearly rare, just one offspring out of 261 analyzed, Morgado Santos seems to think at even that low proportion, the androgenetic process could be important for hybrid speciation, that is, the emergence of a new species from the hybrid. As I always tell my classes, asexual reproduction has its advantages because you don't have to worry about mating or the entire wearisome process of mate selection. Yes, I'm talking to you, speed daters, users of eHarmony.com, and even those planning your weddings. You know what I mean when I say, imagine how much time could be saved without the process of dating and mating. Solo reproduction does have its appeals, don't it? However, it has major drawbacks in the long run and is ultimately a risky strategy for any species. Clonal reproduction reduces variation, and variation is needed for future generations to be genetically strong. Lots of clonal species have gone extinct when their environment has altered and reproduction was inhibited, and that lack of variation may explain why androgenesis is so rare in nature. Morgado Santos finishes by saying, quote, we are still uncertain how important our observations are. From one isolated androgenic event in S. albernoides, it is unclear what this means in the greater sphere of biology. Nonetheless, we hope that readers of our work will pay more attention to unusual reproductive modes. There are a lot more of them than one would think, but people just tend to ignore them. Unquote. Well, that's all for me for now. As always, take care, watch that juice intake, watch that sugar intake, whether you're male or female, keep watching the skies, and I hope I've inspired some of you. Until next time, this is Jim Campanella.